Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution.
Hello and welcome to Intelligent Design the Future. I'm Casey Luskin, and today we're going to be talking with Dennis Wagner, the Executive Director of the Access Research Network, who's going to discuss with us ARN's Top 10 Darwin and Design Science News Stories for 2009. Dennis, thanks for being on the show with us.
Glad to be here, Casey. I always look forward to it.
Yes, this is, I think, what, the second or third year now that we've had a podcast with you about the Top 10 Science Stories for the year. Is that right?
That's right, yep.
Our listeners can actually go back to the ID the Future archives if they want and listen to the top 10 stories. This is actually a service that the Access Research Network provides for the ID movement. Basically, every year, they will compile what they feel are the top 10 ID stories of the year. And you guys don't just do the science stories, Dennis. You also do top 10 media stories and top 10 cultural and public policy related stories. Is that right?
That's right. We'll be coming out with those separate lists in a couple of weeks. There's lots of news to cover. When we started this, we just had one list where we covered all that, but the amount of news on this area has grown so much that we felt we really needed to break it out in separate lists just to cover all the great stuff that's happening.
Dennis, before we jump into this too much, can you give us the URL where our listeners can go to get this information?
Sure, Casey. Our general website is arn.org, and then if you add to that /top10, T-O-P-1-0, that'll get you right to our top 10 stories that you can go back several years and read, and they're just a PDF file you can download and share with your friends, and it also has links to the original science stories and reports on the science stories.
So that's arn.org/top10. Listeners can go there to see the top 10 Darwin and Design news resources going all the way back to 2006. I also want to talk a little bit about Access Research Network. I am a huge fan of ARN, largely because you guys are a bunch of great people, but also because your website is a huge, huge resource for people to go and get information about intelligent design, not the least of which is what I would say is probably the biggest online intelligent design media resources bookstore. Go and check out ARN.org. You can pretty much find a place to buy just about every single ID resource that's ever been created, ranging from books to videos to audio products, including now even YouTube clips. So Dennis, thank you guys for the great resource that you guys provide for the whole ID movement with this just exhaustive ID online bookstore that you have.
Well, I think the internet's a real game changer, and people can find stuff at the touch of a button, and we thought it was a priority to make stuff available, easily available on the internet, both free articles and books and videos, all that stuff.
Well, there's one other item of brush clearing I think that we should talk about before we get into this, and this is a little bit funny. I've been reviewing Wikipedia lately, and I came across the Access Research Network entry on Wikipedia. And many of our listeners are probably well aware that Wikipedia has a pretty harshly anti-ID bias. They're full of all kinds of conspiracy theories and points of views against intelligent design, which, you know, aren't supposed to be on Wikipedia. It's supposed to be neutral. It's not supposed to have a quote-unquote point of view. But, of course, when it comes to ID, there's double standards everywhere, and those rules really don't apply. So when I was reading ARN's entry on Wikipedia, which I'm sure that you guys had nothing to do with, its entry actually says that ARN, quote, acts as a de facto auxiliary website to the Discovery Institute Center for Science and Culture, unquote. And this is, of course, reflecting a common theme on Wikipedia. On its articles about ID, the Discovery Institute is like a wizard that's pulling the strings of some non-existent ID conspiracy. And, of course, that's a point of view, which is supposed to not be allowed on Wikipedia. I want to go back to this, Dennis. Is it true that ARN is a de facto auxiliary website of the Discovery Institute?
I wish we were. We might have better funding if we were, but unfortunately, we're mostly a volunteer organization, and you know, have no funding relationship with Discovery Institute. In fact, you know, we were around a long time before Discovery got into this issue. I think your Science and Culture Center was set up in the 90s. As you know, we started in the 80s, early 80s, building our website back when, even before the internet was around. We used bulletin board systems set up on a computer in my garage. So if they want to have any conspiracy theories, they can trace it back to my garage in Goleta, California. That's where it all started.
Where all good conspiracies start, right?
In garages, that's right.
Yeah. No, I mean, I do find it so amusing that They claim that somehow ARN is a puppet of Discovery Institute, when you guys have actually been involved with the ID debate for years before Discovery Institute. I mean, you guys predate Discovery Institute's involvement with this whole issue by quite a long time. So, I mean, this is just goes to show that Wikipedia is not a trustworthy or accurate source on intelligent design. I think most of our listeners probably already know that. But, I mean, we can laugh at this, but unfortunately, you know, there's folks who read Wikipedia, don't know any better, and believe these sorts of conspiracy theories.
So, yeah, my son actually first brought this up to me when he read the entry on ARN and said, "Dad, you got to get this fixed." And, I have been following a lot on Wikipedia, and I told him, well, friends in this area have tried to get their entries fixed to no avail because the editors don't allow you to correct any misstatements there. So I haven't even bothered trying. If you figure out a method of getting it corrected, let me know, and I guess I'll try. But until then, we'll have to do what a lot of teachers have done in recent years, and that is ban their students from using Wikipedia because it's just not a reliable source. I mean, I use it occasionally, too, when I want to quickly look up something, but if it has anything to do with a worldview, I just assume that their viewpoints are slanted towards their editorial position. You know, if it has something to do with rocks or sky or things that don't have worldview attached to them, then their descriptions are usually okay.
Oh, yeah, I mean, Wikipedia is great if you want to know who won last year's American Idol. I mean, it's
right.
Going to always have that information for you, but when it comes to these kinds of issues, it's virtually impossible to have the truth actually stated on Wikipedia. And by the way, Dennis, I don't know how you can get the truth promoted on Wikipedia. I don't edit Wikipedia, but I actually contacted Wikipedia earlier in 2009 because it said that the Idea Center was moribund and that the organization was dead. And I found that very amusing since there are a number of vibrant Idea Club chapters. The Idea Center has been put on a number of events, and Idea Club's put on a number of events during the year of 2009. And I said, you know, how can we get this changed? Because I don't trust anybody to go in here and edit this to make it be accurate. And actually, a high-level Wikipedia editor, after I showed him a lot of the information that showed that the Idea Center was not, in fact, dead, he went on there and tried to work with just the normal Wikipedia users, you know, the guys who were on there putting all this misinformation about ID, and they refused to permit him to change the Idea Center entry so that it said that the Idea Center was not dead. And this was a high-level official guy within Wikipedia whose actual role there is to work with outsiders who have these kinds of problems. And even he could not get past the anti-ID Wikipedia editors. So Wikipedia's entry on Idea Center still says that it is dead. And I find that to be utterly amusing, given that, you know, Idea is doing as much as it ever has been doing, and that's quite a bit. So anyway, enough of that. We don't need to complain about this all day, and I could do it all day, by the way. And maybe we'll have some more information on this in the near future, actually, for our listeners. Let's get into the top 10 Darwin and Design science stories for 2009 from the Access Research Network. I think, Dennis, you want to start with the honorable mentions. So let's talk about these honorable mentions. Your very last story that you mentioned is that the cell uses cloud computing and how the cell is sort of mimicking the way that computers work. Tell me about this story.
Yeah, there's two stories in the honorable mention dealing with the continued complexity of the cell, the amazing workings of the cell, I call them. And this is kind of a growing story every year. We get more and more of these as scientists just discover how intricate the cell really is. And this one, they discovered because they removed some genes from a certain cell expecting it to quit functioning, and it kept working. And they were baffled by that. And as they dug down into it, they found out that there were what they call paralogs, which are copies of what the master control genes do. And so if the master control gene goes out, the paralog takes over and does a similar function. So this is very much like cloud computing that's used by Google or Yahoo to keep their large networks running. So one data center can go out and their system will keep running. So here we have this very sophisticated kind of computing concept we've discovered is now in place in the cell.
Now, Dennis, I've actually heard people argue in the past that this kind of backup redundancy is actually evidence against design. And when I've talked to engineers and computer science experts, they've actually told me that this sort of redundancy is an excellent design principle and that this is exactly how designers ensure that their products and their technology is going to keep functioning when things go wrong. So I've always found it amusing that people actually use these sort of backup design, backup redundant systems as evidence against design when it's absolutely the exact opposite of that.
Yeah, I guess they might argue that, you know, evolution took a couple of wrong paths, but it had some leftover systems it left there that serve as a backup. But, you know, I'm a communications engineer, and you're right. Redundancy is, you know, one of the top design considerations we use in any communication system we build. We want to make sure that the signal gets through the satellite, even if one of our links goes out. So I definitely know it's a design principle, and it's one I use in my career all the time.
Well, and the problem with those arguments, I think, Dennis, actually, is that the complexity of these backup systems is often so big, and yet the selection pressure to preserve them would be so low because they would only be used in very rare occasions when the primary systems fail. So you're actually talking about trying to build extremely complex backup systems in a very low selection pressure. I really think that Darwinian selection is not going to be able to account for that. Let's move up to another interesting story talking about cellular motors working in concert and how cellular motors actually are coordinated to be able to allow motion to take place. Can you talk about this a little bit?
Yeah, there was an article appeared in Science Daily in February 25th of last year. Researchers from the University of Virginia said that they found that molecular motors operate in an amazingly coordinated manner in even simple algae when it's needed to move the flagella. This contradicts earlier models that pictured the motors competing with each other, kind of in a tug of war. And this new study proves that these things actually work in a coordinated fashion, all pulling in one direction as if under command, or in an opposite direction, again, under instruction. There's some kind of coordination going on here. You know, if one molecular motor is an amazing evidence of design, what's a whole symphony of them that are all coordinated together? What does that have to say about whether things got here by chance event or by design?
And how about this story, Dennis, that they're walking white blood cells that actually crawl through our veins and arteries to find areas of infection. Can you talk about the story a little bit?
Yeah, this is amazing. And there's actually, if you go to our Top 10 website, arn.org/top10, and click on the link, there's a link there to the Harvard BioVisions that gives you an animation of this. And it's you're watching it. It's like watching a Star Wars movie. You know, you got this little machine that basically the white blood cell, its job is to go find infections in the body. And it has to go against the blood flow. And so it has to have a way to attach itself to the vessel wall and move. And as they studied this thing, they discovered that the little probes or legs that it uses to attach to the wall are actually trifunctional. They're used for gripping, they're used for moving, and they also are sensors. And so as they punch down into the wall to grip, they are also sensing the distress signals, the damaged tissue, to direct them in to where the damage is that they need to work on. So, again, just an amazing design that we find in something as simple as a white blood cell.
Very cool. Now, the next story is actually something that I got involved a little bit. This is from an article that was published in Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences in August of 2009. And this paper was titled "The Reducible Complexity of a Mitochondrial Molecular Machine." Can you tell us a little bit about the arguments that were made in this paper and what's interesting about this story in terms of the responses from ID proponents?
Well, first of all, Casey, the interesting thing to note is that scientific establishment wants to say that ID is not science. And if it's not science, and irreducible complexity is one of the key concepts of intelligent design theory, then why are they publishing articles in their scientific journal trying to disprove it? You know, you would just ignore it if it wasn't science. So there are some things here that really bother these guys, and they felt the need to come out with a paper in the National Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences saying that this whole idea of irreducible complexity had been debunked. The interesting thing, again, is that Michael Behe, who was the first one to coin this concept of irreducible complexity in his book Darwin's Black Box, responded to it and pointed out some of the flaws in the article, and they refused to publish his letter. That just doesn't happen in science when you pick on a scientific concept and the originator of that concept writes in to respond to that, and they don't even publish it. You know, they just don't want any of intelligent design arguments to be published in any way. And I know you got involved writing a very good response, not only to this article, but several that have kind of picked on this idea of irreducible complexity and shown how they haven't been able to refute that concept yet.
Yeah, Dennis, I wrote a response to this article on Evolution News and Views in September of 2009. And for me, you know, there's a lot of problems with this paper, and our listeners can go and read the post on Evolution News if they want. But for me, the most interesting part and the most revealing part of this paper was the teleological language that was being used to describe the quote-unquote evolutionary process that was used to assemble these molecular machines. And there were phrases and assertions like, quote, pre-adaptation to bacteria ahead of need for a protein import. Or, quote, parts accumulate until they're ready to snap together. Or, quote, machineries emerge before there's a need for them, unquote. And all of these intelligently engineered macro mutations that were part of their explanation of how these machines evolved. All I saw in this paper was teleology. I did not see evidence of blind and unguided Darwinian evolution. And so I just felt like, you know, if anything, this paper actually validated the need for intelligent design to be involved in the origin of these molecular machines.
That's right, Casey. And, you know, just another point, I think, that, you know, at least the dialogue is going on, even though they're not letting the intelligent design proponents, you know, have a say in it. But the topics are being discussed. And, you know, we just need to be vigilant on our side to get out the responses so that people realize that there's two sides to these stories.
And the next honorable mention story, Dennis, was titled Early Large Galaxies Stun Cosmologists. Can you explain the story to us?
They call this kind of a Cambrian explosion of cosmology, and what they mean by that is that astronomers using the Subaru telescope in Hawaii were able to examine five galaxy clusters with ages estimated to be at 5 billion years after the Big Bang, which is pretty early in the Big Bang model. And what they expected to find was small galaxy sizes, because the evolution of the universe, they assumed that they had small galaxies that combined over time to form the large galaxies that we have today. Well, what they found was that these five early galaxies were just as big, if not bigger, than our galaxies that we have today. And so that just kind of turned their whole theory about how the universe got to be the way it is upside down. And we're not certain the implications of this yet. That's why we didn't make it one of our top 10 stories. But it was certainly an interesting story to say, gee, we got some real data here that just doesn't fit with the standard cosmological explanation. So, again, another more interesting evidence from science that causes us to have to go back and, you know, relook at how the universe got here.
Well, Dennis, I think we're running out of time for this first podcast, so we'll just discuss the honorable mentions for now. We'll come back with another podcast where we'll actually discuss the top 10 Darwin and Design science news stories from ARN for 2009. Again, listeners, you can go to arn.org/top10, that's top 10, to actually read about all these stories on the Access Research Network. I'm Casey Luskin with Dennis Wagner from the Access Research Network. Thanks for listening.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute 2008. For more information, visit www.intelligentdesign.org or www.idthefuture.com.